Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is terrific to have your company for this episode of the show. Now, recently we passed 450 episodes, which is quite a milestone in podcast land. And I wanted to take a moment to say thank you to each and every listener who's tuned in over the years. I really appreciate the fact that you take your time and listen to the show. And it's our mission to bring you the information and the strategies and the tools to help you grow and scale your practice. When I started the podcast, I was always fascinated by the idea of not invented here. In other words, how can we learn from other industries and apply those lessons to dental practice? And I'm still as fascinated with that question as I was when we started the podcast all those years ago. Now, every now and then, it's also really important to think about, well, what can dentistry offer other industries or what other businesses might be spawned from our knowledge of dental practice? And today I'm joined by Dr. Namita Gupta, who is one of the co-founders of Restock.com. And many of you will have heard of Restock. And in this conversation, Namita shares a lot about her background and her story about how she grew up in a family business and the lessons that she learned from that and how her parents really guided her in some really important decisions that she's made across her life. And one of the things I really enjoyed about talking to Namita is her deep appreciation and understanding of the problems that dental practices face and how she's been able to craft a solution in Restock to solve that problem. But not only is it about the product and the solution that she's found, it's about the lessons that she's learned and the things that she's learned from Restock that have been able to be applied back to her dental practice. So in this episode, we talk about lots of different things. We talk about the first practice she owned and the lessons she learned building and developing that. Then she spoke about her second practice and how that was, again, a really different experience because it was, a practice that was an existing practice rather than a startup. And the third practice came with a partner. And so all of those practices have gone very well, but there's been different lessons along the way. And she shares all of those lessons. She talks about the devil being in the detail about how you go to a new level in your practice. There's always a new devil to conquer. And we spoke about reporting. We spoke about team. We spoke about complexity. We spoke about simplifying all that. But then we also spoke about Restock, its mission, and again, those lessons that she's learned from the discipline of running an IT business, a tech startup, and applying that back to dental practice. So lots in this episode for you. It's a really interesting story that Namita shares. It's a wide-ranging conversation, lots of pearls of wisdom. Please do have a pen and paper handy because she shares so much of the valuable information that you're just probably going to have to come back and listen to this two or three times over because there's so much gold that she shares. So I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I enjoyed recording. And without any further ado, here's Dr. Namita Gupta. Namita, thanks so much for taking the time to come and join us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How's things in your world today?
Yeah, very good, Jesse. Thanks so much for having me. Super excited to be here.
Well, I am too. And we had the opportunity to talk a little bit at the Dental Practice Owners Conference a little while ago. And you were part of a panel discussion that I had the opportunity to facilitate. And I was always fascinated by some of the things that you were sharing and some of the perspectives you had. And I wanted to take an opportunity to invite you onto the podcast so we can dive a little deeper, get into the weeds a bit and talk about the life and times of Namita. And obviously you're very well known as the founder with your husband, Stefan, of Restock. And that's an exciting and I think really innovative approach to ordering in dentistry. And obviously we'll talk about that in a bit. But what's your background? Did you have a business background? How did you stumble your way into business?
So my family background has always been in business, irrespective of our educational background. So I had uncles, aunts, my mum and dad, everyone were in professions, but everyone had a business that they relied on. So I grew up surrounded from a very young age with people that really gravitated towards business. And I saw that hustle and the drive, but also a lot of the freedom that business ownership could give someone. And that really attracted me. And I didn't realize it at the time, how it shaped a lot of my future decisions and how it's changed the way I look at things.
So can you just elaborate on that? How did it shape your decisions? How did it influence you? What did you learn? What did you observe?
So my parents were immigrants to Australia in the late 1970s. My dad had, prior to coming to Australia, he'd left India 10 years prior and had gone to Germany. He was a computer engineer by background. Mm-hmm. And my mum grew up in a very well-known, wealthy Indian family that had a publishing printing business. And my uncles were all PhD holders, etc., but were all in the family business. When Dad came to Australia, he worked for a couple of years as a computer engineer, but realized very quickly on that in Australia at that time, to really make it and to do something of value and have the freedom that he knew he wanted, financial freedom he wanted, he had to get into business. So of all things, he actually bought a news agency in Surry Hills, Sydney.
Oh, wow.
And had a news agency for 30 years. And back then, it was a really great business, but it was really hard work. Mm. So for the first decade of my life, I barely saw my dad. He worked 7 days a week. His start times were 4 a.m. doing paper deliveries. And, you know, he and mom really worked really, really hard. And then the next 10 years, he took Sundays off, so worked 6 days a week. And as a child, I spent a lot of time in the storeroom of that news agency, you know, dusting magazines, you know, vacuuming the floors, working the till when I got a bit older. And I saw my parents and how they worked to make $5 and how hard it was. But then it gave us a lot of freedoms that I also saw a lot of my friends didn't have. Like, for instance, we would go overseas a lot, and mum and dad built a beautiful house in Wurunga. And I saw how business ownership, the $1 dad made in business ownership was worth maybe $2 made as an employee in a company. And that really stuck with me, you know. And I saw that with my mum's family back in India whenever we would go back on holidays, how my uncles and my cousins all worked really hard, but they were building something collective together that was much bigger than what they could individually do. And it really inspired me.
You mentioned that your mum's family had a lot of PhDs in there, and you also mentioned that a lot of your relatives were in the professions and had gone into their own business within the professions. I'm curious about the choice of dentistry because, you know, growing up in the news agency, man, that is that's hard work, right?
Yeah, really back-breaking work.
But I think that there's a lot of value in learning what hard work is as well. Sometimes mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I've led I suppose by some standards a fairly sheltered life, by other standards a fairly exposed life. But, you know, learning what hard work actually is, I think, really useful. But I'm curious to understand the choice to go into dentistry and what influenced you, what shaped your decision. Again, was it influenced by the academic side of your relatives, or was it influenced by your mum and dad saying, you know, retail's great, but maybe a profession's got some different pros and cons? So I'm just curious, Dan, what were the influences and what was the decision?
Well, I don't think, because my family was very highly educated, education was the number one important factor growing up. But simultaneously to that, I come from a very creative family where the arts is really important. So my mum, when she was raising us, made sure there was always balance in our lives, which I'm so grateful for, because, you know, she'd be like, well, you've studied enough now, but study time is from this time to this time. And then post this time, it's about having some fun. And then there's some relaxation time. And then there's time for creativity and the arts and extracurricular things that you should nourish and develop. And so I actually grew up in the arts. I was a dancer. I also loved the visual arts of painting and sketching like my mother. And so I was very creative. You know, I was also, you know, doing well at school. When it came to sort of picking a profession, I actually was gravitating towards medicine. And believe it or not, my ethnic parents sat me down and were like, we think that is the wrong decision for you. And I got into medicine in Adelaide University. Yep. I thought I was going to be an obstetrics gynecologist or something like that. I love children. I wanted to do something in women's health.
Yep.
And my dad, he was just like, that is the wrong decision, because I was also working a lot in charity, in not-for-profits.
Yep.
I had this creative side of me, and Dad obviously wanted me to go into business. And he was like, look, if you don't have that balance in your profession, you're not going to be happy.
Yeah.
Medicine's hard work. You know, medicine relies on you being in internship and residency, and then you've got to do your specialization. He was really like dentistry kind of has all those elements of healthcare, of helping people and, you know, of like the medical world, but you graduate after 5 years and your own boss at the end of that, whether you work for someone or not. And therefore it gives you time and freedom to explore not just business ownership, but also other aspects of your life, like philanthropy and charity work, which I was really interested in. So great advice from sound people that were my parents, and they really pushed me into dentistry. They really didn't want me to do medicine, and that's how I fell into it. So I deferred medicine for a year just in case.
Yep.
They'd advised me ill, and I went into dentistry, but I loved it. I just loved the creativity of dentistry. Dentistry kind of sat in my Venn diagram, you know. It was business, healthcare, and creativity and the arts. And so it really fulfilled me.
I can't let the conversation pass without remarking that, you know, my wife is a dentist as well, and she has migrant parents, and I don't want to generalize because I just don't know the situation, but your story there sounds very atypical of migrant parents saying don't do medicine is what I'm trying to say.
It is. It's very, most people think I did go into the medical world because of my parents. My parents actually thought I'd go into architecture or interior design, or I was really good in math, so they thought maybe I'd do actuary or something like that.
Yeah.
When I came to them and said I want to do something in healthcare, they were a bit surprised, and it wasn't something, they never pushed me into anything. They sort of wanted to see where my brother and I landed in terms of interest. Interest was really important. But then within your interest, how do you marry up all the different facets of life? And that, I'll come back to that concept of balance. They were really big on balance. You know, you have to have a social life. You have to have time for family. You have to have financial freedom. And you've got to enjoy the work you do. So how can you kind of marry all of that up in one profession if possible?
I think that that's really interesting. And it's funny that you talk about this, because what it's reminding me of is we talk about in the work that we do three major currencies that we're trying to extract from our business. Obviously, there's the financial security or financial independence that we're talking about. There's the time freedom to enjoy other aspects of your life and have a well-rounded, well-balanced life. But then there's the joy and the satisfaction and the fulfillment piece that comes from that as well. And it sounds like your parents have really emphasized that for you. And what a blessing, and like what foresight, I would say, is to think about how to live a life rather than how to find a profession. And I think there's an important distinction there. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you know, you get into dentistry, obviously you've deferred medicine, clearly you stuck with dentistry. We know how that story has ended. So you let medicine go, presumably. Mm. When you graduated from dentistry, you know, were you always thinking about practice ownership with that background, with your mum and dad's, you know, interest in business ringing in your ears? Was that kind of always going to be on the, you know, trajectory? How quickly did you get into business? What was that like?
So I graduated 2004 and I opened my first practice in 2010. And so there was a 6-year gap between that time.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing, if anyone knows my father, they know as soon as I graduated, for him, it was like a ticket into business. And he was like, well, when are we starting the first practice? And I was like, hang on, hold your horses. I need to really dive deep into this profession and hone my skills in every different aspect of dentistry, not just clinical, but also work for practices and see what I like, what I don't like, and have varied experience before I decide how I want to do this. So I used the next 5-6 years just to really educate myself on what was out there in the dental world. And it just so happened that my mentors at the time, I've had some really wonderful mentors through dentistry, you know, Professor Kleinberg, Dr. Tony Au. I worked for Tony Au as his Saturday nurse for 5 years.
He is one of the nicest guys on the planet, just isn't he?
Yes, he and Kami, you know, to date hold a really special place in my heart. And I learned so much from him. He really took me under his wing.
Mm.
And so, interestingly, because I was creative and I thought I'd go into more cosmetic dentistry or orthodontics, you know, surgery and things, I wasn't gravitating towards that. But because of Tony and then, you know, Professor Kleinberg, I kind of fell into the implant diploma at Sydney University. And I thought, I'm going to take this opportunity, because at that time when I did that, I was the youngest person who'd done the graduate diploma, and I was also the only female in that year. And
wow.
I didn't realize it at the time, but my life was also kind of pushing me towards this female-centric position. And when I realized that, I thought, this is an opportunity. I need to grab this with both hands, even though maybe implant dentistry at the time wasn't something I was considering. So I completed that. I worked for multiple practices as an associate, and I drove up to Maitland. I worked on the Central Coast. I worked within Sydney in higher end practices, so more suburb, more inner city practices as mm-hmm. well, which were more cosmetic focused. And so I got really varied experience. And then, 2010, I was like, I know what I want to do. I want to have my own business, and I want to focus it and have it be a family-centric business, but bring a lot of the things that Sydney practices were offering, but to the Central Coast. Because back then, there was a real lack of dentists on the Central Coast. There was a real need. So I recognized, I could start here and I could probably do well, irrespective of how well I run this business. Mm. But then if I could run it really well, offer out of hours appointments, et cetera, and bring that professionalism that I'd learned working for other really great practices, we could do something with this. And that's what happened. We started Gosford in 2010 and it just went really well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I want to just come back to a comment you made about your dad when you graduated. You said, when we're starting our first practice, and I want to hone in on the word first. So did you start with a vision of always having multiple practices? Was that always part of the plan? Or were you thinking, I'm going to have one, see how we go, dip my toe in? Because I know you own multiple practices now, but sometimes that's a strategy from the outset, and other times people kind of stumble their way into that through circumstance or just by thinking, well, this one's going well and maybe try again. So where did the multiple practice strategy start for you?
Really interesting. I think it started from a really young age that I didn't realize. Mm. But yes, having graduated, I knew I wanted to have multiple practices. And one of the key reasons for that was I'm female and I knew I wanted to have a family. Mm-hmm. There were certain influences in my life, again, thanks to my dad. I think I mentioned to you before we started recording that Indra Nooyi, who was the CEO of PepsiCo for a really long time, was always held up as like the epitome of what a woman could be in my house. And my dad was the one who really pushed that on me. And she was the main things that he drove home for me with Indra was she was married, she had children, and she was CEO of a Fortune 500 company. And therefore, you could have it all, but maybe not all at the same time.
Yeah.
So I knew that I had to really work really hard when I graduated because I had a window before the biological clock would tick in and I'd want to start a family. Mm. That's why I got all my education done, my experience and learning with other practices and other business owners completed. By the time we started Gosford, I was ready to have multiple practices because I knew then what would happen is I could step away from clinical practice while I had a family, but still be involved in the business side off-site remotely and keep my toe in the game and still feel relevant.
We've had many, many female practice owners come through the work that we do, and probably the hardest challenge that we have from a coaching perspective is preparing some female practice owners for maternity. And I'm, like you said, I think it was, again, off air, that I think it was the biological clock and the career clock, they don't always work at the same pace and different priorities come up at different times. And one of the challenges that we see is sometimes we'll see a smaller practice with a really delightful practice owner who's wanting to start a family, but there's just not enough leverage in the practice to allow that practice to be self-sufficient in their absence. And it's quite challenging. And what I'm appreciating about this conversation is the foresight that you had to go, I know I'm going to want to have a family at some point. That's important to me. So therefore, I need to have things in line and sorted out well ahead of time. And I want to just talk about that degree of planning, because I think there'll be some lessons here, particularly for female practice owners who might go, wow, that I really resonate with that, and I'd love to just dive into understanding that in a bit more detail. From your perspective, you know, when you decided or not decided to start a family, but when you were really clear that having a family is really important to you, and, you know, I'm thinking about this particular window of time and I'm now at this particular moment in time and I've got these things to do between now and then, what was that strategic thinking looking like? Because it does – what am I trying to say? What I'm trying to say is having a family obviously, you know, we talk about family planning, but then we talk about planning. Like that's the next level family planning is what I'm trying to get at in a really good way, and I really like that. And I wanted just to ask you what insights you have around that process, the things that you learned, the things that went really well. Again, particularly for the younger female practitioners that might be listening to this program and thinking, I want to do what Namita's done.
Yeah. So obviously I had great role models growing up. Like, for instance, you know, I idolize Indra Nooyi, as you can tell. And she actually said that. She said, the biological clock and the career clock is in total conflict with one another. So when your career is meant to be taking off, that's when your biological clock is ticking away and you're meant to start a family. And so for females, there's this unique challenge that, you know, I appreciate the challenge for men also, because, you know, especially in this day and age, men are really leaning into the house and into the home environment and being real partners with their wives or partners in that whole raising the children, starting a family journey. But, you know, the bulk of that burden and absolutely the physical burden of that falls on women. And so we've got this unique challenge where we're not immune to wanting to be successful or having a really polished career and feeling like we're making an impact. But at the same time, we have these desires to start a family. And so, again, you know, yes, there was a lot of planning here and a lot of foresight, but I was guided by really great guides my whole life. And so, you know, I'll come back to that decision point in time when I finished high school and I got into dentistry and I got into medicine. And my dad said, okay, he gave me his spiel. I wasn't convinced. He said, okay, we know a lot of doctors and dentists in our family circle. Give them a call. And there was this one woman who I grew up with, Divya, who was, she's now an anaesthetist in Perth, very, very successful. And she was married to a dentist, Sandeep. And I called her and I said, I'd really love some advice. Can you give me some advice? And for the record, there's nothing else that Divya would have done except for medicine. But she spoke to me. She asked some really interesting questions to dive deeper into what was motivating me. Where did I see myself? What did I want from my future? Did I want a family? How important was that to me? What other things were important to me? And we had that conversation. And she said, look, there's nothing else in the world I would do than medicine. I love it. I live and breathe it. But she's like, now I'm married to a dentist and I can also see I couldn't do what I'm doing if Sandeep wasn't home at 5 p.m. And had the flexibility there. And she's like, you're like Sandeep. You want to have all these other things in your life. Maybe dentistry is the right way to go. So because I was already focused in on what I wanted longer term, which was to have children and to be a mother was important to me. I knew I had only that period of time, maybe 10 years, to get my education sorted, my experience sorted, and to get into business, because business was going to give me freedom. I knew that from a really young age. I'd seen that with my parents. A lot of people get scared with business and they think business means you're now not free. Yes, there's an element to that. You're never turned off from business. You can never really go on a vacation without thinking about your businesses. But it, in my mind, it gives you complete freedom because it means you don't have to be the doer in your business. For instance, in dentistry, you don't have to be the main dentist in your practice. You can own the business, you can support, you can mentor, and you can take time away and then do those things that are of value to you, like have a family.
I really, really love that. And again, I just think they're such wise words. And so for any of the young practitioners, male or female, I think it really is important to know what your outcomes are and to be really clear about what's important to you. And I'm also a big believer of business by design. And what you've done, you know, in the most pure sense, is you've designed a life and had a business to support that life. And I really, really appreciate, you know, setting out with the end in mind and creating it. I think it's some wise words. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of us, and I've been guilty of this many times, so don't want to kind of be that person in the glass house throwing stones. Far from it. I'm as guilty as anyone. There's sometimes maybe I didn't think about some of those things early enough, and you find yourself stuck in a little bit of a position where you go, now I've got to unscramble the egg a little bit and get out of that. And so I think having that forethought, that foresight, is really important. What I wanted to ask you, though, is when you started the multiple practices, and again, you've obviously figured out that multiple practices equals greater leverage and, you know, so on. What were the challenges that you encountered in the early days of, you know, Gosford's up and running, great, big green tick, we're happy, that's awesome. Now we're going to go on to practice numbers, you know, 2, 3, 4. What were the challenges? What were the obstacles? What were the oopsies that you encountered along the way?
So with Gosford, I think one challenge we had was we just went in too small. Mm. We were safe. We were trying to be safe. We didn't have a lot of money. I didn't have a lot of money. And so I wanted to not be in huge debt. And so we went for a site which was 4 chairs, and we very quickly outgrew that. We just didn't realize the demand that there would be on the Central Coast at that time. So that was number one. The second was not setting up systems and processes right from the beginning. We thought we had time, and that was the one thing we did not have in the end. And so we then spent the next 2 years chasing our tail, just playing catch up, trying to get some semblance of structure in place at Gosford. So it actually meant that Newcastle's practice then started 2 years later. And at that point, we bought a pre-existing practice. Now, pre-existing practice had a whole nother set of challenges. It came with pre-existing staff, mm-hmm. their mindset, pre-existing patient base that had been used to a particular way of doing dentistry and experiencing the practice. So there were a whole host of challenges there that were different. So there, the main challenge was around HR and getting the team to be on board with our vision, mission, and values was a challenge. And in the end, over a period of years, we ended up just replacing the entire team, and that was what had to happen. And we then relocated it to a more modern practice premises as well. And once we did that, that was great. We then started Neutral Bay, and Neutral Bay, we knew straight away, we're not buying an existing practice again. We loved the way Gosford went. We liked to be able to start from scratch. But this time around, we went into partnership, and that comes with another host of challenges, because now it's not just your vision and the way you want to do things. There's another person to consider and their viewpoint. But in many ways, that has enriched my life, having a partner that did think differently. I've had to think about how to deal with conflict, different opinions, how to navigate that, and find the value there, which there was immense value there in the opposing decisions and opposing viewpoints. But in terms of actual operations, going from 1 to 2 and then 3, the operations just became that much more complicated. So firstly, just the team. As the team expanded, the problems that you face in one practice just magnified. And now, you know, you'd have so many people sick, changing jobs, wanting a pay rise, not adhering to systems and processes. So now you've got to hire more people to manage more people. That cuts into your bottom line and profit margin.
Yep.
And, there was that challenge. The second challenge was we knew that, you know, once we got to 3 practices, we were like, okay, our vision at that point was to have 20 sites, just keep expanding and keep rolling out this model. So we stopped at number 3 and we said, okay, now let's look at, we've had now 10 years of experience here. What's worked? What do we like? What doesn't work? Mm. And how are we going to create a system or a model that can be just replicated each time we start a new practice? This is our, process for this. These are our digital solutions. This is how we're going to hire and train, etc. So we looked at that, and what we realized, there were gaps in what was available to us as business owners in the market. in terms of systems, processes, and digital, particularly digital solutions that were available to businesses. And having had perspective of what was out there in the world for other businesses, it just seemed like a crying shame that dentists and medicos in general have to operate with really substandard systems and digital processes, if I might say.
Yep.
So, you know, I feel like dentistry is really cutting edge when it comes to technology, but when it came to systems, business processes, it was still stuck in the dark ages. And we're running, you know, 10, 20 years behind, for instance, you know, the mining industry and the hospitality industry, in terms of the, you know, the solutions they've got, that means that they're not so key man dependent, mm-hmm. and they're not so reliant on their teams, because as we know, since COVID, that's been one of the biggest challenges for dental business ownership. So when we looked into that, we realized, well, you know, creating a system that's just literally a replicate model is actually really hard and requires a lot of work and planning, and that certain systems just were still archaic, and that's how Restock started.
For anyone listening, we talk about scaling up a lot, but the thing that scales fastest is complexity. And complexity, it's like a snowball that kind of gathers snow really quickly. And like you mentioned, with, you know, the teams across three locations, that becomes unwieldy. So you are relying on great tech. And I want to talk about Restock, because I think that's a perfect jumping off point, but I can't start that conversation without just sharing really quickly. In 2008, I got really interested in digital marketing. It's a bit of a story I won't get into now, but I discovered a program at the time called Infusionsoft, which has now been rebadged to Keep, and many people will be familiar with Infusionsoft. And it's a CRM. And to this day, I'm still waiting for a decent CRM to plug into a PMS, where you can track a lead from a website through the delivery of the service and out the other end. And that's 15, 16 years later, and we are so far behind in that. So I really appreciate the fact that you've identified a tech gap and sought to close it, because I agree with you. I think dentistry is cutting edge in so many ways. Clinically, we've got all the gizmos and gadgets that, you know, we need, and then some. But from a business operations point of view, there is certainly gaps. So I want to talk a little bit about the systems breakdown that led to the creation of Restock. You know, obviously, you know, Restock is around ordering and inventory management and other things of that nature. What were the problems you saw across your practices? And equally, what were your practice owner friends talking about that made you think, actually, Restock, there is a need for a better solution here? What were the problems that people were talking about?
So I think we have multiple competing interests as dental business owners, particularly groups that are looking to scale. And, you know, a lot of those are really important to focus on. Like you mentioned, marketing. How do we bring leads in? Then how do we nurture them and execute on really great treatment, get that review and finish off the cycle? These are things that we should be focused on as business owners. But what I was finding was, not just in our businesses, but even our friends' businesses, they were so focused on back-end processes, menial tasks in the practice. Their staff were focused on it as well, that really were not patient-centric or front office-focused, that drives the actual revenue in the business and drives the patient experience and outcomes in the business. And I was like, there has to be a way to reduce the manual labor that goes into admin tasks in a dental businesses. So that's things like, you know, when it came to procurement in particular, that was the area we saw, you know, just to rewind a little bit, if we look at KPIs, stock spend is the second largest variable expense in a dental practice after staff. And we are spending copious amounts of hours on staff wages, on managing procurement, and may I say, pretty poorly. Most businesses we interview, when we ask them, do you know how much you're spending as a KPI value in your business on stock? They can't tell us an exact number. Or if they can, we're not confident that they're actually tracking it in a meaningful way, proactively. So, you know, it's a huge expense in the business. And if we're looking to scale, wages are going up, inflation's hitting, rent's going up, Everything's costing more, and we're not focused on the second largest variable expense in the business that we can have an impact on. If you're going from 9% of total production being spent on stock down to 5%, that's a huge saving to your bottom line. And that means that then you've got a staff member that's been freed up in the week to be able to focus on training new staff, give your patients that customer-centric experience, look at marketing, internal marketing and external marketing activities in the business. Or you could set up another revenue-generating stream, like another chair, another unit in the business. Like, that's how much you can save.
Huge.
If you could get that saving. So procurement, some of the challenges we found was you've got over 200 suppliers in ANZ that you would, you know, that are available to you, but most practices limit it to 5 to 10 suppliers, just out of sheer frustration from having to order from multiple suppliers and manage the communication, manage different reps, manage different web portals. Then how we engage with those suppliers, there's so many forms of communication. Mm. And so we were having a lot of mismanagement where maybe a PM had sent an email to a supplier about a particular deal, but the person who was doing the invoice reconciliation was different and didn't have visibility on what had been discussed and agreed on. And maybe only 6 months down the track, we realized there was a discrepancy and invoices resulting in thousands of dollars of overspend. And then you're spending another 6 months trying to rectify and recoup funds. And many times you just let it go because it wasn't worth the drama and wasn't worth the time that was needing to be spent. The other problem we had the most expensive people in the business working on the least productive areas of the business. So myself and my practice manager were the ones chasing up invoices, reconciling invoices, making payments, which is all manual. And it was just a waste of time. At one point pre-COVID, we actually had a fairly different, workable system with an Excel spreadsheet with all of our products and the prices we were paying. But then COVID hit. And that was the moment when I realized COVID was just one thing that could happen to a business or an industry like dentistry, where we suddenly ran out of consumables. We didn't know where to order what from, and everyone just had to make do. And those Excel spreadsheets became obsolete very, very quickly. But there's always going to be things like this that happen to a business, like your practice manager leaves. Mm. And now that key individual with all that IP related to that particular process in the business has just left your front door with all that information, and the practice is left scrambling. So it was so important. We realized we needed a centralized digital hub or ecosystem where we could invite all our team members into it, set their permissions so we could control their activity when it came to ordering and invoice reconciliation. But we could expand that IP, that intellectual knowledge, across the entire team so that if someone was away, someone left, it wasn't critical. We needed to be able to set a budget that you could adhere to, not retrospectively looking at spend, but proactively looking at spend as you're spending. So you've got an opportunity to change what you're doing then and there. Because retrospectively, to be able to claw back 2-3% overspend of production, that's huge, you know, and we still need to be working as a business. So, you know, there were a lot of challenges. Invoice reconciliation was an entire other challenge that we had in the businesses across three sites. I can only imagine what some of these, you know, mid-market groups who have 20 sites plus have. They've got like entire teams dedicated to invoice reconciliation and procurement. It's just such a challenge. So this is where Restock came into play.
Obviously, there's a big problem around procurement. Yeah, some of the things that we've noticed when it comes to the procurement, similar to you, is you've got the highest paid person doing the lowest paid task. You've got a whole manner of different issues around key person risk. But just at a really granular level, one of the things that we saw was over-ordering, misordering, not managing the stock, wastage, really essentially money just being, you know, lit on fire in essence, you know, in one form or another. And obviously Restock came about because of the issues that you faced and you observed that others were facing. But it's a digital platform, and you know, as far as I'm aware, unless dentistry has changed a lot, there's no kind of elective to take away. How do I build a digital platform in the BDS degree? So I'm just curious to ask you, how did you go about building it? Because again, you know, this is an interesting story, and there's a lot of lessons in there about building businesses, seeing ideas, spotting opportunities, but then translating that into something useful, practical that delivers a solution. Like, there's a lot in there. So I'm just curious to ask about how you got to building it, how you got to developing it. What's that look like?
The first major challenge I had when it came to ordering was when I had Dia, my firstborn. She was born via C-section. I was at the Mater Hospital. I thought I'd set everything in place and the practice was good without me now for the next few weeks. But I got a text message from my lead DA 3 hours after delivery saying, we're running out of gloves. Where do I order it from? And that moment for me explained to me that I had failed as a business owner because I had not set my team up for success. There may have been a document somewhere in some computer on desktop, but she didn't know how to access it. She didn't know who to order from. I hadn't set her up for success and the business for success. And I realized, you know, to talk about freedom, I wasn't free to have a baby and be more than 24 hours post having a baby without having to dive back into business processes. And so for me, that was the first challenge. I took that and then I thought there must be a better way. I went and had a look at the solutions that were already existing in market, realized they weren't complete solutions for me and what I needed. I went to the suppliers, I spoke to them, I said I'd order everything from them if they could provide some framework that gave me some system that the practice team could adhere to, and I wasn't getting anywhere. And I just kept complaining about it. We had expanded now to 3 sites. It was magnifying. And Stefan just one day turned around, my husband, and he just said, that's it, we're doing it. We're gonna develop a platform to fix this. And I was just shell-shocked because, as you said, I mean, you know, if something doesn't work for me in tech, I turn it off and then I turn it back on again after waiting 5 seconds. So, you know, for me to be a founder of a tech business, it was hilarious to me at that time. I just thought, how do you do it? Where do you start? And, you know, we know nothing about this startup world. We know nothing about this technology world, but we knew the problem really well. And we were the customer, and our friends were the customers. And so that part we got, we knew what it had to do. We just didn't know how to get from A to B. And so in that process, then Stefan shared that he went to school with a really remarkable guy by the name of Jonathan Louis. Jonathan was one of the 2 founders of another startup called Airtasker, which you might have heard about.
Yep, I've used that service.
Well.
Yes.
Yes, it's done very well. And it was just one day, like, I was sitting there and I said to Stefan, this platform, it needs to feel easy. It needs to speak to the staff that are on the ground level in the business that do all the ordering or would need to use a platform like this. They're used to using Iconic, Amazon, Woolworths Online. It needed to feel like that. And I pulled up Airtasker and I said to him, it needs to feel like this. And he said, well, funny you say that. I actually went to school with one of the guys who founded that company. And I was just like, you know what? That would have been great information to have 6 months ago.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Thanks for sharing that 6 months after we've started. that would have been really good to know. But I think we needed to go through that journey and have had version 1 of what we had created to know that this sucks. It's not good.
Yeah.
It's not usable. It fills a void, but it's not really what we want to release into market. We really passionately wanted to provide a solution we felt would change the lives of dentists and their teams. And so that's what I felt Airtasker had done in that realm, you know, really changed people's lives, and it had given them back time. So they didn't have to do these certain tasks around the house, et cetera. And it basically started an entire economy for these people who wanted to be able to do these tasks. And it created that bridge between these 2 entities. And we met Jonathan in Sydney. He now lives in Singapore. And this guy is just one of the most creative people I've ever met. You know, by that point, he had 3 startups to his name. He certainly did not need to be doing anything more. He could retire if he wanted to, but he's so passionate about creating solutions to real problems. And you could see that that was really what drove him. Mm. And so what he taught us was A, how to navigate the startup world and all the challenges associated with it. You know, we went right back down to preschool level again in terms of navigating that world and having no experience. And so it was great to have a guide and a mentor there. But more importantly, he helped us look at the problem completely differently. So as a dentist, you might go in there and you're like, I've got an inventory problem. I need an inventory solution. Mm. And Jonathan helped us understand that. Think about it differently. What's the end outcome as a business owner you're really trying to achieve? You're trying to save your staff time, reduce headaches, and save money. That's really what you're trying to do. So it was like, well, look at that. Keep that as your core focus rather than directing what the solution needs to be. And the solution will come to you. And that's how it developed.
Namita, clearly the whole origin of Restock is about, you know, solving a really meaningful problem that practice owners have on a day-to-day basis. And I'm curious to ask then, what's the vision for the business? Where do you see it going to the future? And in particular, what I'm curious to ask about is the role of new technologies such as machine learning, AI. Where does that fit into the vision for Restock? How do you see that changing the way that we do things?
So what I'm really excited about is I don't think we've had this much tech revolution in dentistry for a really long time. You know, I think you've had your PMS solutions come into market X number of years ago. Then you had CAD/CAM technology that totally changed the way we did digital dentistry. But in terms of business, there hasn't been as much activity as there was when we launched 2 years ago, and that ADX, that was really a powerful statement to the industry where I think we were saying we really desire and need better solutions. And so I think we're in a really interesting space. I think you can see there's going to be a lot of development over the next 5 years, and the way we operate as business owners is really going to remarkably change over the next 5 years. You brought up this CRM solution, for instance, and marketing. We're already seeing those integrations coming into play with practice management softwares. There's already talk around this. A lot of the groups that are doing really well, that what we're seeing are the ones that are embracing technology that is available and really just flying with it. And they're getting that edge over other businesses that are still stuck in their old ways. And so I think there's going to be a huge shift.
Namita, I think what I feel like is that dentistry is finally being brought into the 21st century. I think dentistry is on a massive catch-up curve. And, you know, solutions such as Restock and other things that I'm aware that are being developed by other people as well, I think going to be a really important part of that catch-up curve. Like you said before, we're 15 or 20 years behind the mining industry and other things of that nature. But for me, like looking at the CRM, as I said, 2008, it's like, come on, man, let's get this going. And it's great
to
see.
We're in 2024 now, so yeah.
Yeah, so it's a while. So it's really good to see. And I think you're right, though. I think the practice owners that embrace technology are going to be the ones that have a competitive edge. And I think the ones that you kind of understand that the business world is always changing. Technology has to play more of a role for the business management side of the practice, not just the clinical side. As you point out, people are expensive. People are, in the nicest way, somewhat unreliable just because of the human condition. They're not always replicable. They're not replaceable. They're not, you know, plug one in, plug one out kind of thing. And so I think having technology to automate and systemize a lot of things is going to be really important. So let's talk a little bit about AI and its role in procurement, because I can see there's going to be a massive role in there for you. How do you see that shaping procurement, you know, predictive ordering, maintaining appropriate levels of stock, all those sorts of things? What's that look like from, you know, what you're seeing?
When we looked at stock take, so if we think about procurement, there's multiple parts of that journey. So there's stock take, inventory management, then there's the ordering section of the journey, and then there's the invoice reconciliation and payments part of the piece. When we looked at inventory management and some of the solutions that are available, they're good, but they still rely a lot on human behavior and compliance. Mm-hmm. And this is where most systems fall down, as you know.
Yep.
have a new team member comes in, they haven't been adequately trained or they don't understand the consequence of what they're doing. They forget to scan something in, scan something out, or however you've got your system set up, and suddenly that system breaks down. So we knew in our businesses, nothing's going to replace manual stock take or inventory management. At the end of the day, if you want to ensure that you've got all the consumables you need to operate, you need to do some level of stock take. Mm-hmm. But what we did recognize was you could reduce the amount of time you spent doing that, and you could increase the visibility to the team as to what you needed to have. And this is where we're really excited. So we've got certain systems already in play in the platform that drive a lot of efficiencies when it comes to inventory management, give a lot of visibility to the team as to what should be on the shelves at any given time. But where we're headed is more that predictive ordering piece, like what she said. So, for instance, I don't know if you do any Woolworths online shopping. I do because I'm a mum and I run so many businesses and I need to find efficiencies. So this is how I survive, mm-hmm. is using what's available. I do a lot of Woolworths online shopping. And I can set up my list, but it prompts me. It'll tell me what's on special. It'll ask me, have I forgotten commonly ordered grocery items that I would normally order, etc. This is where we see AI, predictive ordering, and also PMS integration. So you can see, you know, what your books look like in the coming weeks, what sort of procedures you have or what sort of procedures you've done, marry up business intelligence, data points there with what you've spent in terms of consumables, and start to give you an understanding of volume of ordering and set in place predictive ordering or standing orders. So that works really well for suppliers because now they know how much stock they need to have on their shelves. We all have issues with our suppliers of having back-ordered items. That's not their fault. Mm. You know, if you understand what's happening on the supplier side, they've got many challenges also. And they don't very often know when they're going to have these big bursts of activity in terms of consumption and ordering. Mm. So if we can set in place predictive ordering, we're more likely to get the stock that we need. The suppliers benefit because they have an understanding of what consumables they need to have on the shelves at any given time. And it just helps that entire supply chain process. But for us as business owners, it takes the labor out of a lot of this. It's not going to eliminate it. It's going to reduce our dependence on our staff to do a lot of the manual work associated with ordering.
Yeah, I think this is going to give consistent outcomes, you know, reduce errors, et cetera, et cetera. Still people involved, but supplemented heavily with tech, which I think is going to be that lovely systemize and humanize element to it. Namita, I wanted just to come back to something you mentioned at the beginning, and that was going back to your dad. Yeah. And obviously he's been a really influential figure in your life, as has your mum, and talking about balance and all those sorts of things. And my ears pricked up earlier in the conversation. You said he had a background in computer engineering, computer science.
Yeah. Yes.
And of course he's, you know, encouraged you to go down the dental path rather than the medical path. I'm just curious to ask, what's he make of Restock? Given his background in technology, he must be over the moon.
I was really apprehensive to go to my father and tell him about my idea when we had the vision and we had done a bit of research and we decided what was going to be involved. It was a huge risk for us, Jesse, doing what we did. We have spent a lot of our own capital and a lot of our own time, and there's been an opportunity cost, obviously, doing this as opposed to our vision of having a DSO of our own. And so we very much shifted focus away from what was originally the plan. And I remember sitting down with my dad and explaining my vision, but he just saw opportunity and he saw a need within the business, within the industry. And I think he was excited by the concept of change, you know, and revolution when it came to this side of dentistry. I remember there was one point in this journey where things were really crunching. Every startup founder will tell you this. There's multiple points actually where you get really crunched and you think, why am I doing this? You know, what has possessed me to go down this pathway? I could have had a very easy life, you know? And I remember he and my brother are the two people I will often pick up the phone and call when I'm in that real moment of, you know, almost existential crisis. What am I doing? And he said to me, he was just very matter of fact about it. He's like, of course it's going to cost that much. Of course it's going to be hard. You started it now. You have to finish it. I need you to succeed in this because this is worth putting in the effort for. So he's been our greatest supporter. I just love knowing that he's there in my background, you know, egging us on and being our champion. Even though you would think as an immigrant father, they're so risk adverse, you know, he's never diminished me. He's never made me smaller than what I could be. He's always helped me to dream big and execute on that.
What I'm picking up out of your mother and father is they've had, you know, really encouraging family life, yet paint a big, bold future for yourself and, you know, give you every support to go out and chase it. And I'm really excited to see, you know, the restock story continue on and to see what, you know, is unveiled as the future arrives. And so I just want to say from all of us in the dental profession, thank you for solving a really meaningful and important problem. I think it is one that every practice owner is going to, you know, come and say thank you for, because it does, you know, it does take a lot of energy, effort, money to kind of not have those solutions in place. And I want to say thank you on behalf of the whole profession for, you know, taking it on. And not that you need any more encouragement, because you get plenty from your mum and dad and your own support network, but I think the rest of the profession was saying keep going and that'll be terrific. So we look forward to seeing more and more of Restock. So Namita, I just want to say thank you again for taking the time to talk to us today. You've shared so much of your own journey. It's been really insightful, so many lessons. And I guess I've just got one last question for you, because I think it's an important question. You've still got your practices. What's Restock taught you about running your own dental practice?
It's made a profound change on the way we operate as a business in terms of dentistry. There's been so many learnings along this journey. You don't know what you're learning and you're picking up as you go along, but now reflecting back on it, one of the biggest things we've done in the business is organization over the last 6 months. And Jesse, I was fortunate to be at your conference 2 weeks ago, and a lot of the things you were talking about really resonated with me, and I could really see how applicable they were in the startup world or the technology world or in other industries. And I just love that you're bringing that to your client base and helping them understand how to really operate efficiently and effectively by creating structure and focus in the business. So I think that's been the key thing. We had to have big vision. You've got to know what your big vision is. You've got to know what your five-year plan is, but then you've got to bring it back down to what am I going to do this quarter? And if I can execute on these three or four things, we then take a giant leap forward. And we just keep going quarter by quarter. And so that's now been the biggest thing, is firstly getting buy-in from the entire team. So going back to the mission, vision, values, making sure everyone who's on the bus wants to be on the bus and is in the correct seat on the bus. And so we did that. Once we got the team sorted and they had full buy-in into the vision, then it was, okay, where do we want to be? And why do we want to be there? What's the why for everyone in the team? Not just me as a business owner, but our associate dentists. They want to make more money, have more time with their family, enjoy what they do, feel like they're contributing to the local community. Okay, so we thought about that. Things like our practice managers, they want to be elevated in an organization that feels like it's going somewhere and it's growing, and the opportunity for them to take on more leadership and a different role is there, and they can see that pathway. So these are some of the things. We got to the why, the crunchy why. Why are we here? Why do we do what we do? And then we created structure around that. Okay, we're not going to try and do everything tomorrow because we're going to fail. Mm. Rather, we're going to go, what is critically important this quarter to focus on, that if we don't, it could result in a lot of problems for us down the track. And so we really, you have to be so disciplined, because there's so many ideas and so many things you want to work on simultaneously. And when you have a big team, everyone's got a voice. So you want to take everyone's voice, but then narrow it and hone it down and get consensus that this is all we're focusing on this quarter. And now how are we going to actually execute on that? And who's accountable for that?
Yeah.
So creating structure in place and putting that in documents that you refer to weekly with your team, where you pull it up in meetings and you have a real structure to your meetings, and you go, okay, well, how are you going with what you're responsible for this week? What challenges are you facing? Who on the team can help support you? So ultimately, individuals are responsible, but we're all a collective unit and we're here to achieve the same outcome. So who do you need to support and get involved? And that way, you know, measuring, if you don't measure, it doesn't exist, kind of concept, and really tracking, reviewing, and then finishing the quarter with an objective for the next quarter. I think getting that structure in place has been the biggest thing.
Love it. Yeah, we love that rhythm. And it makes a huge difference. And I love the disciplined pursuit of less. We have a saying, you know, when it comes to taking on projects for the quarter, you know, always one, sometimes two, rarely three. And it's just about trying to juggle all that. Because I think you're absolutely right. If you try and take on too much, it's just, you end up with a whole bunch of incomplete things and frustration. So I love the fact that you're rolling through that too.
There's one thing that I've really grasped over the last 12 months, apart from structure, it's a concept of fun. I think that was the one thing my parents always kept telling me to have more of, and I just didn't really truly lean into that. And now I've really lent into it. I'm like, let's have fun. Let's have fun, not just with family or with friends or in downtime. Let's have fun in business and work as well. How can we show up today and enjoy what we do? And I think the biggest thing is, like you said, do less, focus on less, but do it really well. Means you're not overwhelmed. You're not stretched as a team. You're not, you know, getting angry at each other and blaming one another. Rather, you're celebrating your wins and you feel like you're achieving something, and then it just makes it all really easy and fun.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
That's my word of 2024 is fun.
Okay. All right. Fun. Well, it's been fun talking to you, Namita. I enjoy this. This is my bit of fun. You know, one of the things I'm very grateful for in my life is I get to have interesting conversations with interesting people, and this conversation has ticked lots of fun boxes for me. So thank you so much for being here today to share your insights, your wisdom, your experience. And as I said a moment ago, I think all of us are cheering on Restock because there's a real need for the solution, and thank you for what you do. For those people that want to get on board with Restock, I guess I'd like to just be able to point them to the website. Is that where we should direct people to, restock.com?
So you can go to our website. It's www.restock.com, and you can register for a free trial, and someone from our team will reach out and just help you navigate the platform.
Namita, once again, thank you so much. You've been a wonderful guest today. Let us know what the next phase of Restock is going to be, and I can't wait to get you back for another chat about, you know, the ongoing story, because I think the story is very riveting so far, and I can't wait for the next chapter.
Thanks so much, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.